Blog Talk Radio.
I'll do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com. I'm calling to you live from Las Vegas, Nevada, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We've got a great show lined up for you today. I've got my co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, with us. Rhonda, I'm trying to get you unmuted right now, so just...
I got it. Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
Crazy cold. It's in the 20s in Branson area in Missouri. And
oh, yikes.
Yikes is right. I know it's winter, but, you know, I mean, still. It's a little nippy
out there. Man. Better you than me, girl.
I know it, yeah. So I'm excited to be here, though, and... It's so funny. What we're doing with today's show actually came from, I was talking with my good friend Jason Ullman, and he did a fabulous job at creating a number one best-selling book and really launching himself as an expert online. But he said, wow, if I were going to start over and redo that book, man, there's a few things I would have definitely want to include that I could have made it more profitable. And I was remembering also back to Jack Canfield, who said that how many millions did he say he think he lost?
More than 10 million, according to what I saw one time.
Yeah, right, more than 10 million. Because the original Chicken Soup for the Soul, the first number of books, many of books in the series, did not have any kind of a website to direct people to. So it just made me think, well, you know, there are some things around product creation that I think we could talk about, and I've invited some folks who might come in and share some of their experiences as well, and we can share some tips and strategies and things to avoid and things to make it great, Gina. So that's kind of what got the inspiration going, and there's one more piece to it, but just what do you have to add so far?
Well, there are so many different things we could talk about with regard to product creation. We could be here for like a couple weeks, I think.
Easily, nonstop, right.
And there's so many things to think about in creating products that, you know, they're not necessarily intuitive. And until you actually sit down and find a system that helps you do that, or hear from other people who have been there, done that, even experts out there make mistakes in creating their products. And they freely admit them later on. So I'm really glad we're doing the show.
Yeah, I think this is great. And one of the things that early on when I started learning about creating a profitable book, I mean, that's kind of what launched me into this whole arena. And I came from someone who knew that I could write book after book with no problem. But at that time, I didn't know anything about the marketing. And the first person I encountered that really helped me understand about bringing out your wisdom, your teachings, your expertise in a way that's truly serving your audience, which that's the piece that makes product creation so relevant to our show, is how a product really can serve a client. And I don't mean just because it meets their need, but really how you can best serve your audience through the creation of a product. And that's something that tends to make people kind of scratch their heads because they just get caught up in the actual product part of it.
Absolutely.
The book that so, you know, like Paul Jackson was the person who helped me realize that, because I'd never, of course, even seen an ebook, never mind created one, and, you know, had some things to help you make a book really have some pizzazz and really make it serve people. And I've, you know, incorporated a lot of things I learned from him, and now I actually have a checklist for creating an ebook that I use when I do an analysis of someone's either ebook or print book. But yeah, there's just so much that we can say, and I think a lot of times people are leaving money, piles and piles of money on the table. They don't even realize it.
Absolutely. Like I said, great topic. So let's talk about product creation. Where do you want to start, Rhonda?
Well, I think one area to start. You're going to love this one, Gina. I know you are. I don't know about you. I'm sure this is true for you, but a lot of times I get people who come up wanting to write a book or do something, and they just want to jump right in and create the thing, and they haven't really taken the time to step back and plan a strategy and figure out how the product fits into their overall scheme of their business. Did you ever find anyone who just didn't seem to plan ahead?
Way too many people that don't seem to plan ahead.
How many times this week?
Absolutely. And it's a big deal not to do that, because you want to start with your end result and work your way backwards to figuring out what your first steps are, not the other way around.
Uh-huh. Yes, absolutely. I know of a woman who actually invested in a coaching program. It wasn't mine, but in someone else's, to help her write a book. But the weird thing was, she just went ahead and wrote the book and published it, never even cracked the stuff open, so to speak, never even opened the link to get the materials. And so she's like, oh, well, my book's up on my publisher's website and it isn't selling. Now what do I do? Well,
boy, oh boy.
Let's start backwards. Oh, that's a word too little too late. Is that the product is out on the market somewhere, aside from starting over and redoing it. And when she showed me her book, I said, well, this isn't even designed in such a way. She didn't even mention a website in the book. I was like, oh my gosh. It's bad enough to just say visit my website, but it's even worse not to even list one in there. So, yeah, let's kind of begin, Gina. What would be your advice, the way that you tell people to really start with that end in mind and start with that strategy?
Well, exactly that. You want to plan out in detail what you want from this product. The product that you're putting out, it's not about making money from that product. Will you make money from that product? Sure. But it's such a small amount compared to all the other money that you can make because of this product. So you've got to get really clear on your goals for this product. Is it really just to make money from this product? If it is, I think you're nuts, but go ahead. Or is it really because you want this product to sell product B and product C? And if so, what needs to happen in this product in order to make those other sales happen? So you want to outline that in detail. Do you want this product to build an opt-in list for you? If so, how big? What kind of people do you want on it? Do you want this to make you money too? And if so, how much? Do you want this to build a team of affiliates that can sell other products for you? All these different things have to be taken into consideration in detail before you can figure out the shape and nature of this product.
Right. Absolutely. And I know it's probably just as rampant among people who are trying to make money online as it is for authors to just create something and then chase around. I call it chasing $20 bills, you know, just chasing small change around trying to make money on that, and there's nothing else even in place. And it's just really sad. So, I mean, that's a really big deal to figure out what else you want to sell, and then move forward with a plan. And, you know, I was mentioning, we were on a different call earlier this morning, and I made a comment in that call that really everything, no matter what you're doing, everything starts with mindset.
Absolutely.
And you did that wonderful mindset systems workshop a couple of weeks ago that is such an awesome place to start for anybody, because the thing that tends to happen is that, aside from just flat out leaving money on the table, you can easily get in your own way because of either underlying beliefs or because of lack of planning, lack of thinking things through, any number of other things that happen that really all stem from mindset.
And this is true whether you're talking about building a business or whether you're talking about improving your golf game. Mindset comes into play in everything that you do. So it's important that even before you get started with the product itself, that you really do a little check-in with your mindset. Because that mindset is going to truly affect the outcome of what you're doing. So you want to find a way to get an abundant, success-oriented mindset before you go out and create that product. You want to be able to do visualizations about the outcome of that product. Really be able to close your eyes and envision what it looks like looking at your shopping cart to see all those sales coming in from this product. Do some visualizations about how you're getting people from product A to product B and what that would look like if you just close your eyes. And thinking about the underlying beliefs or fears that you've got activated within you, that one's a little bit trickier because quite often you don't even recognize that you've got those things going on until you get out there and you start doing something and you're not getting results. So it's almost like you've got to start and then see if those things are there. What you can do, though, in advance, is to start thinking about your feelings and how you feel towards these various topics, like selling or like bringing in money from a product. Does it make you feel kind of uneasy to think about those things? If so, why? And what are the underlying beliefs and fears that you've got going on that are leading you to feeling like that?
Right. You'll see the symptoms. You'll see what happens. Like you might observe procrastination if you tend to put off doing part of the task or put off. Maybe you start something, but I know a lot of people that have things that are 90% or 80% done.
I see that quite often, yeah.
And it doesn't get you anywhere. And I think a lot of times it's maybe they say, well, I just keep putting it off. I just don't seem to find the time or whatever. And there could be underlying beliefs. There could be underlying fears and self-doubt. And one of the biggest things I observe is people being afraid to truly take that role as the expert, as the influencer.
Yes.
And I know that you do, too, and with some of the students that you have. I've observed it on a call from a few days ago.
And a lot of that comes from a lack of self-confidence.
Right.
And most of the lack of self-confidence just comes from how people have treated you in the past and how you've treated yourself.
Right.
People need to recognize that if you're not making sales of products you're creating, there's a reason, and it's not usually someone else's fault. It usually has something to do with you. Even in the Mindset Workshop, we had someone who had a very successful business, whose business had failed, and was now trying to get into a new business. And that person kept looking at the business that failed and putting the blame on everybody else.
Right.
And couldn't even see past it, that in fact it was something within that person that could have caused it.
Yeah, I kept saying, oh, well, the other partners pulled out, or this happened, or that happened, and I really had no control over it whatsoever. And really, you do. So sometimes it is underlying beliefs or fears, and sometimes it's really not looking inside to find out where your role really is in something. And, of course, none of us has control over the whole universe, but we do have more than we tend to want to believe in many cases.
Yeah, what we do control is ourselves and the place that we are within that universe.
Right.
You can't change anyone else, but you certainly can do things to make modifications in how you're thinking about it.
Yes. So that's really a big piece. And where can people get a hold of? What's your best mindset product for somebody who is listening to that part and going, I think I've got some junk in my trunk to deal with there. What can I do?
Well, the Mindset Systems Workshop that we just finished a couple weekends ago, that's really the most comprehensive mindset course that I have. You'll find it at askggg.com/mindset. askggg.com/mindset. And with that course, I also include the Miracle Motivational Package, which is a much smaller mindset product that you'll find at abundantpositivity.com. I had so much fun doing the Mindset Systems Workshop, bringing my guests David Granoff and Stephanie Frank on, and really just talking to people about their mindset and watching the shifts that took place even in the two calls that we had. I mean, it was 16 hours that we were together. And between the first part of the program and the last part of the program, you could really see clearly how different people were thinking. And that was neat to watch as it happened.
Yes. That had to have been very, very cool. Very cool.
It was.
So, yeah.
And, you know, one of the biggest ahas for people on that call, there was a woman that was there that was so shocked when she heard one of the messages that you had actually brought up, which had to do with serving and how when you put your products out there, your products are really out there to serve people and to really make a difference for people, especially if you're in the information business.
Right.
And this person had really never thought about it in that way. And she had looked at giving something away for free as just being something you're giving away for free, not something that really served people in a way that caused them to want to reciprocate and get something else that they'd have to pay for.
Right. Yeah, that's the funny thing. You know, a lot of people know, oh, well, for an opt-in, I'm supposed to give something away free. So, okay, let me see. I could do a free report on blah, blah, blah. And they really think of it in terms of what they're putting out. Not, well, let me see. What does my audience need the most? What are they asking me for? What could I give them that would be really juicy, especially in these days when the last thing anybody seems to want is one more email list. So making it really juicy means being of true service and value to that person who needs whatever it is. And
so often when people do go to give stuff away, they look at it as what's the smallest thing that they can give away so that they can sell them the biggest thing. Look at it differently. Don't look at it like that. That's scarcity mindset, big time. Really ask the question Rhonda just asked, which is, what do they really want? Give them the thing that they really want, and use, even if it's huge, and use that to sell them what they really need.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny how that shows up. I even remember showing Jason Ullman a part of a class I give away. It's a 10-part class on how to write a book. And he looked at a couple of my modules and went, wow, do you think you're giving away too much of your system?
Oh, yeah, I hear that a lot, too.
And I said, no, I don't, because what I know to be true, it's not. It's even beyond the belief. I know it. I know it. That for if I and one of the things was the seven elements of a profitable chapter of your book, and I said, you know, if somebody just uses that preaching and they write a really winning book, I mean, I'd love them to buy my products, but I'm not afraid to give that piece of it because that really is a piece, and there always are nuances of detail. And hi, Frissy.
Oh, Bill's trying to get him outside. I'm gonna mute for a minute.
So that there are always are nuances of detail. There are other things you can add, but I am not afraid to share with somebody, well, this is how I want you to construct a chapter. Now, yeah, is there going to be more depth if you buy a product from me? Sure. Is there going to be really the highest level stuff if you take a home study or coaching? Yeah, sure, of course. But what is truly valuable, and you really can take it and do something, and hey, if you take something I've given you for free and you can make money with it, how likely are you to come back to me? Very likely. So I'm not afraid to give a part of the system away, and Gina, I know that you are not either.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the thing that I give away, which is the 30-day challenge, the 30dayiamchallenge.com, the number 30dayiamchallenge.com, if you printed that out, it would be more than 800 pages worth of material. And it's all totally free. And I've had many people criticize me over the years about giving that away for free because there is so much there. And the way I see it is, if I don't give something away for free, why should anyone want to do business with me later? I mean, it really is that big of a deal. And I don't think you can ever give away too much.
Right. Right. And you have to give from your best. It would be as if you had a guest coming over to your home, would you serve the gristly, gnarly ends of your pot roast? Just because, well, I got to give them something, so let me see. Well, here's some kind of wrinkly old potatoes, and here's a carrot that looks like it's seen better days, and then here's some gnarly old piece off the end of the beef that I was going to throw to the dogs. But, well, since you're coming over, I'll give that to you. And, you know, that's not enticing. And so
now, there,
somebody...
It's a balancing act that goes on here, Rhonda, and this is worth bringing up. Here's the balancing act that goes on. Can you give away too much? You can.
Yes,
and here's
how
I look at it. In my high-end coaching programs, for example, early on when I first started putting them out, I had a number of people that I would call friends, not just subscribers, but truly friends, who were very interested in being a part of my classes. Rather than making those people pay for them, I gave them to them. Well, each person would come in for a call here and a call there, and they might actually get through the lessons, but more often than not, they'd only get through them for a couple of weeks. They certainly wouldn't finish the entire program. And it took quite a while for me to recognize that by giving away these valuable courses, I was actually not only not serving them, I was disserving them because they didn't value it anymore. So there is a balancing act between giving stuff that makes people go, wow, what else will I get when I buy it, and giving people so much that they really don't truly see the value in it, so they don't ever use it to get the result you intended. And that can be something tricky.
Yeah, it is. There's a great chapter in the book, Yes, by Rob Heaney, and I, in a minute I'll run and grab it and see if I can find that. But he has a chapter that's called When Does a Bonus Become an Onus?
Oh, I love it. What a great
title. His titles are just brilliant, and every title in that book is a question, which, well, that's another story. But anyway, what he's talking about is there is giving something valuable that people want. And then there is, well, let's see, how much stuff can I just hurl at them? And that's what it becomes an onus. Or in other ways, like you're saying, to only give something away that's high value without doing either a barter or having them pay or doing some kind of a true energy exchange, people don't value it. So, there is always that. And I'm sure some people take the free thing and go, oh, wow, this is a lot of stuff, and they never get through it. For the course, but that can be just as true for your class or for mine or for anybody's, is that type of thing sometimes happens. And we've got one of our guests here. I'm pretty sure I know who it is. Gina, you mind if I bring one of our guests on?
No, please do.
There we go. And hang on a second. Is this Rhonda Court?
Yes, it is. Hi, Gina.
Hello.
Hi, Rhonda.
How are you?
Fine, thanks. And you?
I am good.
Great.
So I just thought you were here with your hand raised and thought you could jump in and join us as we're talking about this. I know that you have created and are creating some products, and we'd love to experience your wisdom and your thoughts on this as well.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that, everyone that's listening, they should definitely listen to Rhonda and Gina's wisdom, because you two have been instrumental in my getting my products out there.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, so so I found it interesting that you talked about the mindset that one needs to have. Most people don't even connect mindset with the product.
Oh, that's a big deal, though.
It's a huge deal. In fact, I have four beliefs that I have people I teach adopt before they create anything for anyone.
Uh-huh. And what are they?
Okay.
Well, the first one is to know that you have no competition because you're unique.
That's a good one.
So while other people, you know, sometimes people look around and like, oh, well, someone has created this, someone has created that. Not necessarily, you know, I think the universe and God gives us ideas, you know, to various people. But no one can do exactly what we can do and the way we can do it with our experience. And I really believe that we're here to, whatever our purpose is, we're the only ones who can teach a certain group of people this specific way. No one else can do it. So that alone should give people comfort and confidence. And that's the first one.
That's a big deal. No, it really is. And for example, I know sometimes when people are doing keyword research and market research, I see that stuff coming up because I remember this one guy, and he was like, oh, no, there's a guy over here who is doing almost the same thing that I'm going to be doing. And I said, well, is he doing it for the same audience? Is he doing it in exactly the same way that you are? And, you know, he finally realized, no. But that can really truly bring up a scarcity mentality, bring up trouble for you if you have this feeling that nobody else should be even close, like as if I would expect that there should be only one person teaching people to write a book, or that Gina would think that there should be only one person teaching how to live the life of your dreams by building a business. So that kind of thing. That's a great one, Anna.
Oh, thank you. And then the second one is there are no mistakes, only lessons. That's my second one. Because I'm a recovering perfectionist. So I'm sure you're familiar with, you know, Thomas Edison and his 10,000 attempts at inventing the light bulb before he actually had success. And so basically what I like to do and what I've learned from you and Gina is to get my idea out there and test it before investing weeks and months and years of work.
Absolutely.
And if it doesn't fly, it doesn't fly. Big deal. I mean, and if it does, it does. You know, and to keep, you know, holding on to the fact that you will eventually have success. It might not be the first time. It could be the second. It could be the third. You never know. So that's, you know, it's just a lesson. It's not a mistake. The mistake is when you don't even bother to do anything because you're afraid to.
Right. What you're really saying is that it's by taking action that you really make things happen, not in spending hours and hours and being so much of a perfectionist, but really getting yourself into action. The phrase I like, and I've heard a few other people use it, is TARL, T-A-R-L, take action, revise later. So you are the recovering perfectionist moving towards being that take action, revise later type of person.
Yes, actually, I am recovered. I'm recovered. Yeah, but definitely, I agree with that. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, this is very important, especially with everyone talking about the way the world is, the business world is, and that no one is spending for anything. You know, I don't believe that. And my number three, the attitude that you need to adopt is someone is willing and ready to pay a premium price for your service regardless of your talents, assets, education, passion, or knowledge. That's my number three.
Love it.
Because people have limiting beliefs. A lot of people have limiting beliefs. I mean, I had them myself. You know, I was kind of shy. I wasn't sure anyone would want to pay for what I knew. One of the things that I did when I moved to Sweden, I was able to earn, you know, $1,406.25 an hour teaching art and design to high school kids. And, you know, most people would say, oh, that's not possible. But it is if you adopt the right mindset and know where to look. So that's my number three.
Awesome.
I liked it as well.
And then the last one is your security lies in your service to others. And Gina, you touched on that earlier. And I noticed that when I don't have success at something, it's because maybe I had a little fear creep in, or I looked at something and say, I need this or I need that, when I first need to concentrate on serving others. And what can I bring to them? How can I add value to them? How can I transform their lives? And then everything else will fall into place.
That's a great one.
So those are my four, the top, you know, my four mindset or beliefs that one needs to have before starting to create a product or even going into service for others.
That's a very good one.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So you just recently put together a new product, didn't you, Rhonda?
Yes, I did. It's called the Four Figures an Hour Blueprint. And so how to make maximum money with minimum clients in record time. That's what I, my most recent blueprint product that I put together.
And where can folks find that if they're interested?
Yeah.
Oh, at fourfiguresanhour.com. It doesn't matter if it's the
number
it doesn't matter if it's the number four or the word four. I have both domains. So four could be four spelled out, and figures with an S, and hour.com.
Tell us a little bit about what the product does for people.
Well, basically it's my five-step system that I use to earn four figures in an hour. And I show the whole case study in there, exactly what I did, step by step. It's very simple. And they can take their passion, talent, you know, and they can use this to earn the four figures an hour in record time. I did this in less than four weeks. And I didn't have a guru, you know, emailing for me. I didn't have a list. I didn't have a website. Oh, and I had less than $25, too. So.
Wow. So can you give us a taste of what you're talking about? What does someone have to do in order to make this work to get a four-figure-per-hour income?
Well, first of all, they need to start out with the mindset. Those four steps that I went in, that's actually in the blueprint. You really have to embrace and believe that, first of all. And next, they need to make a list of their passion and their skills. That's the next step. So anything that you could use, even if your character, your assets of your character, maybe you're patient, maybe you're kind, maybe you know how to teach people or you can break things down easily, you know, that's anything. So it's an exhaustive list of all your talent, skill, education, passion, everything that you like to do.
Okay.
Yeah. And then next, you need to, once you do that, you need to make a list of your problem-solving opportunities. So, I mean, and there's no way that I could possibly go through the entire blueprint now, but I'm just giving them a basic, you know, outline.
That's all I was looking for.
So, yeah. So they just look around every day, online, offline, people you talk to, forums, blogs, see what's out there, what people need, and then you can match your skills. You have your asset list, and you kind of match your skills to the problem-solving opportunities. And then third, and this is all in the first step, and then you need to see who your ideal clients are. So usually when you find your problem-solving opportunities, the ideal clients are there also. Because you see who is complaining and who has this challenge.
Right.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
Yeah, what you're really getting to is that business is this combination of your passions and skills combined with a real need, a real problem that requires a solution. And that's where money happens, because people are looking for solutions.
Yes, people are looking for the solutions. And to answer Gina's question, how do you make so much money an hour, I use what I call my L&L solution, which is lazy and leveraged. Because I don't believe in doing, you know, one-off or one at a time, or you do, there's a way that I teach people how to package it, the service, so they're making four figures an hour and they don't have to sit there and slave away with one client at a time. A lot of times we're limited by that one client at a time, you know, for, I don't know, $50 an hour or even $100 an hour, you know, and I won't do that. It's not time. I manage my time better than that. And I'm a single mom, so I like to manage my time and have time for my family.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And
really?
Yeah, so that's you know, part of what goes into it. There's also testing the market, attracting, using a lazy marketing strategy where you're getting other people, basically you're raising an army of people to market for you to your ideal client because they have access. Yeah. So you get these allies on your side.
Okay. Anything else involved in getting to that four-figure per hour?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Is there anything else involved, or is that all that they've got to do?
Oh, no. There's actually steps. There's the creating the three lists is the first thing. Then making your idea delicious. That's the second step. The third is selling your service. Four is testing the market. And then five is rinse and repeat. And then underneath these, they have several steps, and, you know, it goes more in depth. Underneath each of
them. In the product, you lay it all out step by step for them.
Yes, I do. Step by step.
You know, in terms of what you put into the product, excuse me, the end reason, the whole point is what the product does, but there are things that an entrepreneur can put into a product that helps to encourage the use of your product. And one of the things that she has in there that's great is a checklist, which Gina, both you and I really encourage everyone to do, is especially she has a step-by-step system, and one of the pieces, aside from the case study and the main part of the product, is an additional piece that is a checklist somebody can print off and go through as they're using the system. That piece right there is one of the most powerful elements that you can add to your product to help people get the results that they want and then also to come back to you.
Wow. And I didn't even know that. I just felt that I personally work better when I have a checklist. And you're right. You're so right. I didn't think of it like that. It's funny.
Mhm. Yeah, but I mean, that really is it. Yeah, you work better with a checklist. Well, that's what part of what makes it such a great thing. As somebody is reading, and even if they're taking notes, well, people take notes to varying degrees of usefulness and accuracy. And so if you have a checklist, that will make sure that they put all the elements in there so that they can't go, well, I tried this and it didn't work. Well, probably because they didn't, you know, if they didn't have a checklist, they may have missed a step and not really quite realized it or not how to do it or whatever. So that checklist isn't really a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of creating this product, was this your first product that you created, or have you created others in the past?
I've created other products in the past. I've created other products in the past, info products around networking, mojo cleansing, just different things. In fact, I'm in the process of finishing my book, The Mojo Cleanse for Entrepreneurs. So there's so many products out there, and one thing, that one reason I just really love you, Gina, is that you brought to my attention earlier this year that when I said I had created a number of products, you were like, and you're like, how long has it been? And I was like, oh, less than a year. I don't even remember how long it was. You said that was something amazing. I thought I was so far behind. I really did. I thought I was behind. So that was interesting for me. That was a quantum leap for me. And then
cool.
In talking to Sandra, how she just opens my eyes to certain things when we brainstorm and the mastermind. That's.
And did that help you to get the next product done?
I'm sorry?
did the brainstorming and masterminding and whatnot help you with the first product you were creating or the next product you were going to create?
The next one, because I had created some before, but I had not gotten them out there, and that was my whole analysis paralysis type of, you know, things that I was dealing with, the whole perfection. But I've been recovered. You two have gotten that out of me. So
fantastic, because it doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to be done, right?
That's right, and you can revise later. Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So having created a number of products now, what do you think is your biggest secret about creating products that sell?
Well, my biggest secret would be just, first of all, starting with what you're passionate about. And I think you mentioned it earlier, but not looking at the money and the need, but really concentrating on your passion, what you have to share, and what other people need, because then it will come. I mean, I've even found myself getting into that rut or mindset, you know, due to fear, or you have pressure on you or whatever, but that's the big secret. It's coming from a point of place of service, using the passion, talent, skills, and everything you've learned to service and answer the need in the market.
That's a really, really big thing to have learned. Wouldn't you agree, Rhonda?
Yeah. I mean, to me, I'm like, well, one thing I love about, the brainstorming, coaching, anytime if someone takes anything that they've learned and you have a piece of their success from henceforward because you're able to get something. But, yeah, it is. That's a very big deal, having that sense of how your product really is a tool of relationship building. And, of course, this is Relationship Marketing 101. And that's why product creation is such a fad topic for us to share with people, because of that service element. And when you get that, Rhonda, haven't you found that it has changed as you've gotten more and more into that realization of service and putting service into your products and realizing that that's the whole goal of everything? It's changed how you create products as well as how you do business.
Yes, it has. It has, and things have just. I've had quantum leaps in my personal life, in my business, in my life, because coming from the heart-centered, you know, I'm here to serve people and improve their lives. Definitely, I've had a lot of changes because of that, for the better.
Well, that's
awesome.
Good. That's really good. So, do you have plans to create more products in the future?
Definitely. I definitely have plans to create more products. When I see there's a need, and I will definitely create something. And also workshops and various, you know, various things that can help people.
Well, and if you're doing things like workshops, that in and of itself can allow you to create a product.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep.
And you know, you're right. You brought up a very valid point. I have a series of 12 free teleclasses I held for single Christian women over 30, and I'm going to package that and put it together as a product. So, I mean, anything
sure.
You can do is a product, can be a product. So that's, yeah, I just thought about that.
Absolutely.
When you said that.
Right. And, yeah, and there are all kinds of things. And the nice thing is, too, that to remember is that you can get oftentimes more than one product out of something. So even if you do a free class, as you mentioned, a free teleclass, then you can sell transcripts. You can make the downloads available as a digital download. You can do it as a physical CD or a physical CD with a workbook. If you add any kind of a checklist or an action steps, questions to answer and whatever, all those things make for various combinations of products that you could do. And if you have a four-part series, that gives you really, well, more than five products, but imagine the four pieces separately and then the whole package as a whole. And that can also be a very good way. You bring somebody in on that smaller piece. So it gives you so much flexibility that you can create multiple products out of something that you've done once.
That's what we call having your business being scalable, right, Rhonda?
Yes, it is, and everything should be scalable, and that's, I know coaches who they have coaching, and maybe they have a book, and there's nothing else, really, and so essentially, they're trading time for money most of the time, because it's an hour of coaching or half hour of coaching, it requires that time, whereas so many things you can create and then use them. And, you know, another piece of it is being able to take you and I, Gina, both, and I don't know if you do this or not, Rhonda, so I can't speak for you, but I know that for Gina and I, we both have things where there is a recorded piece so that if we're coaching somebody, we can have them listen to recordings first, and then the time, the one-on-one time, is really spent helping that person specifically apply the information as opposed to teaching it.
Yes. In fact, that's something I recently started incorporating about 2 months ago, because that was a way to leverage my time. But they would still get the benefit of a live coaching call.
Absolutely. That's a great way to do it. And
right.
In the next product that you're going to create, any ideas of what that product's going to be yet?
Yes, I do. I have. I know exactly what it will be. It's the Mojo Cleanse for entrepreneurs. And I have a small group that I'll be teaching in the next 2 weeks. And basically, it came from attending a lot of different events and seeing how people at these events, it could be a marketing seminars or, you know, various events, and people weren't connecting and forming relationships with, like, successful people who were eager to mentor them. They were spending thousands of dollars, you know, going to these events and leaving with a stack of cards that collected dust instead of JV partners and referrals. And they weren't creating that almost instant know, like, and trust bond with the people they met. So, and they were just pushing too hard, not getting anything out of it. So basically, I want to give them more confidence, more money, more life, and I want to do it in record time. So that is going to be a live small group that I'll be teaching. And, of course, I'm going to record it. So then that's going to be a product. So.
Oh, there's a shocker. No.
And, you know, you can see products in so many different things and that you're doing anyway. If you can use those things you're doing anyway to create a product that can then make you money, why not?
That's true. That's true. I love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I have not personally seen your products, but I can't wait to check them out. I'm really anxious to see them after we talk today.
Oh, yes, definitely. What? I'll send that to you. In fact, I phoned you the other day, but I'm sure you were busy, so I could get an address.
And I know I got it. I just haven't had a chance to see it.
Oh, no problem. I was going to send it to you. That's what I was going to send, the Four Figures product to you, but I'll send it to you afterwards.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. If you have, let me back up. In this last product that you put out, where does the money come from?
What do you mean, where does the money come from? You mean people who are
making money, other than just from the straight sales of this product?
Where does the product making money come from to make the product?
How does the product that you just put out, obviously are selling it, and selling the product makes you money. Are there other ways that you make money from making sales of this product?
Well, yeah, on the back end, also people might want coaching. That's another way to make money from the sales of the product.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, people want, you know, so the upsell, basically. People want coaching, people want to work with you, maybe they want a day, an intensive with you for a day, various things, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, and so my question was more specific to your book. What are those things that are in there that are going to make you money down the road?
Well,
one of them is getting people into a coaching program of some sort.
Oh, another thing that's going to make money, not even down the road, it's funny, is that I was at a seminar this weekend, and there are two people I met in different cities here in the States that want to bring me in to do a live workshop for a group of entrepreneurs in their city. So that's another way that this product is going to help me make more money.
Absolutely.
One of the things that's really good to do inside of a product, one of the best ways that you can increase your potential sales is to make sure that every piece, whatever's inside of that product, besides doing whatever its job is, like let's say the checklist, or if you have a bonus file or whatever, to make sure there are other embedded ways to cause other sales to happen. So,
yeah. And
for example, inside of a physical book, you might say, go to such and such of a link to receive 3 bonus gifts, and then, of course, that creates an opt-in list and creates other money. From inside of a digital product, on every page, you might have something about an additional useful resources, and that might be 3 or 4 things that could all be paid products, additional products of yours. So people who have bought this product of yours might also like whatever, like you often see if you go shopping at Amazon or a number of other stores. So when you intentionally embed those in your products, and to the extent that you intentionally embed those kinds of opportunities into your products, it just gives you these additional, very much passive income streams, because somebody sees the product, it's on their hard drive, they open it, they print it, they start using it, and then they see here, maybe you mention a different product. Oh, if you're working on bringing out your own personal mojo, check this link out, and you have another link or whatever. So that's just another way to, and it does serve your audience because it's something else that they have a strong desire for and a need for, and you point it out to them so that they're able to get it.
Yeah, that's very important.
And so the info product, I'm assuming it's a digital product that you just put out, right?
Yes, it's digital.
Does it do any of these things in that product now?
Yes, I do have links in there. I have a link for a special that they can get with me to help them. And to get on the list to get more information, there are links in there and each of the components of the product.
Fantastic.
But I definitely could improve. Everything can be improved. So.
Well, that's always the way, so you learn for next time.
Yeah, absolutely, Rhonda. I'm making an assumption here in that I'm going to say that, have you made sales of that product yet?
Yes, I have.
Have any of the back-end sales started to come in yet?
As a matter of fact, yes. There are 2 ladies that want to host workshops in their cities, live workshops.
That's great. Usually what happens is when you make sales of the one product, it can take more time for the sales of the other stuff to happen. But once they do start happening, it's usually very consistent. As long as you're making sales of the first product, sales of the next product, and the product after that, or any other products that you have in it, start happening a little bit slower, maybe 7 to 10 days. But then they continue to go for quite some time afterwards. As people are going through the material in product A, that they may do it today, they may not do it for 6 months to a year. When they do go and do it, they should get back to the site that sent them to the info product in the first place, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, and did those invitations to do the workshop, did those come from purchasers of the product, or were those the ones from the live event?
Well, one was from a purchase of the product, and one was from the live event. Actually, it's the same thing, because one of the ladies at the event asked about the product. We were just talking. And she went to purchase. Yeah, she purchased the product, and then she came to me the next day at the event and said that she wanted to do a live event in her city in Texas.
Fantastic.
So she's exposed to the product first, And then right. she was exposed to the product first, and then she wanted to, the next day she said she wanted to do that. And then someone else that had bought the product, you know, virtually that I had no physical contact with, wanted to, well, actually she was a Facebook, one of my Facebook people in my Facebook network, then DM'd me, you know, messaged me and said she wanted to set something up too.
Well, that would be great.
That's really what? Great. So, yeah, and that's why you got to always think, as Ben Mack would say, think two products ahead. Always think ahead of whatever it is that you're creating into how else might people interact with you and how else might you bring in sales.
True, true. And like you said earlier, the one thing that my product is missing is the link to my previous networking secrets report. That I did not put in there, so that's why I said it could be improved. I need to put that in there.
Well, next time you do a revision, no big deal. You know, just include that, and you can always send the updated version to everybody who has purchased it if you wanted to, or that's always an option once they're already on that list for you.
Great, good idea. Thank you.
So, Rhonda DiBaccio, Story Lady, what else do we want to talk about with regard to product creation?
Well, there are a few things that I can mention that are simple and yet powerful. They're simple things that anybody can do, but that most people don't think about. Would that be all right to share?
Absolutely.
Okay, so here are a few things that really help in making things stand out. One thing is if you have any kind of a product that's delivered as a PDF, and this is really simple, put a border around the pages. Why do I say that? Well, because putting a border, put aside a frame, it adds a level of professionalism to what it is that you're doing. And it means it gives a frame, it helps the eye follow down whatever material is on the page. So, I mean, how simple is that? It takes you like a second, probably less than a second, to put a border, a page border around, and it just happens on all of your pages. And I don't know if you really notice or not, Medjina, you might. Do you notice a difference in things that are formatted just with that simple border versus ones that aren't?
I do. I don't know the exact number, but there is definitely an increase in back-end sales by doing that.
That yeah, and
wow,
because it gives that, yeah, it's a very, very simple thing.
And even using your copyright notice to have a call to action that leads people to a resource, so few people do that, and yet that's one of the single best ways of making back-end sales, is just have a call to action with the resource right in the copyright notice.
Hmm.
Yep. Page footer that leads them to your free bonuses or to whatever, a resource page, that kind of thing can be very good. It can also be, especially if you're including links from other people's stuff or other places, it can also be good to have something like a / resource page where all those links would be listed, and this way should something change, then they can go there and find out where the accurate resource is. And that's a simple, again, a fairly simple thing to do. But if someone goes to look for whatever you've mentioned, and maybe since if it's electronic, you can put out an update, but if they have an older version of it and they didn't get the update or something, this way you're able to show them where the correct link is. And it may be that it's to an affiliate product, or maybe you changed products, or maybe they changed one of my friends just changed shopping carts, and I said, have you let your affiliates know? Because I found about this from somebody else, and I have affiliate links out, which are not. So we don't know where to go for the new ones. And so those kinds of things can happen. Somebody could have just simply changed shopping carts, which means that your affiliate link to their product could be dead, and you wouldn't necessarily know it. So having a place where people can go is very helpful. It's as simple as adding something into your product that says, here's a list of all the links that I mentioned in this product, and for updates and for additional resources, go to whatever, forward slash resource, and if you find a broken link, just check there. It might be that something's updated. So that also then gives you a way to get them onto your site and say, well, here's all your links. And by the way, while you're here, you might also enjoy something else. And you can put other products and things in front of them in that way. So again,
and
that's
always remember that the people who get your products, they are sometimes going to pass those products on to other people. So don't assume that the reader or the person going to use that product is the person who bought it who's already on your list. Always think about those other people that got it free through someone you sold it to and how you can get those people onto your subscriber list as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and it's funny because people sometimes go, well, I don't want anybody passing on my ebook or whatever. And yes, while there are ways to protect your stuff and whatever, I say, you know, If I sell you a product, and even if you give it to somebody, which it's not like I'm encouraged to deal stuff and give it around or whatever, but I said, if somebody does, but if they go, wow, that looks really interesting, or, ooh, I don't have that 10-part free writing class because so-and-so gave it to me, well, how are they going to get it? Or they might buy products from you or become a coaching client or take a larger product or whatever. You just never know what could come of that. So, yeah, you're right, to be aware. Your product could be passed along. It could be read later. It could be somebody prints something off and they're looking at it later on. They maybe don't remember where the original document is. I mean, there's all kinds of ways. So the friendlier that you can make that product to be to make sure that people get onto a list and get the resources, the better off it is.
I have a question for both of you.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Other people might be thinking of, you know how on the at the copyright notice page, you see people saying that, you know, if you didn't pay for this copy, it's pirated and you should write in. How do you feel about that?
I'll defer to Robin and then I'll tell you why I dislike it.
Okay.
I have a notice often in the front that, you know, says it's for the person's use, but I don't worry about it in the footer. And I really don't go, well, this is pirated, it's illegal, and blah, blah, blah. I don't like to get into a tizzy like that with people because I still feel like if you're going to read my product and get value from it, you're going to feel well served. We gave it to you or you got it through nefarious means. You're going to feel indebted to me in some way, shape, or form. Chances are you could buy my product, you know, get onto the list. Maybe they only gave you the ebook, and I have six other bonuses in there that are really helpful, like checklists and tracking sheets and stuff that you didn't get because they only gave you the ebook. Well, then you're going to want that other stuff. So I'm really in favor of an abundance mindset, and if you go screaming, yelling, and jumping up and down about theft and piracy and all this other stuff, I think you just set yourself into a scarcity mindset and really can put people off.
Absolutely. And I think that the same similar thing that you just said on that, by putting that into the copyright notice, it's changing the nature of the relationship that you have with that person. They no longer feel like you're serving them. They no longer feel like everything about what they're learning from you is something that's really going to give them value. It's almost like that one line in the copyright notice stands out so loud that they can't even hear any of the other message that's there. So just by adding that to it, usually you won't get people consuming the product. And if they don't consume the product, then they're not likely to go and buy anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I typically would just leave that type of a notice off. If I'm going to put it in, I'll put it somewhere where it's not quite so obvious, such as in a license that comes inside the zip file or even on a copyright page for the book. If you have a print book, you know how right before the title page you have a copyright page? Well, you can spell that kind of information out on that page. And usually what I do on that page is it won't sound quite as harsh as what you just made it sound like, but I'll tell them that this is a single book in a series of books put out by Directions University, that they can find this and other products listed on DU at, and I'll give them a link. And mm-hmm. I'll tell them that, how do I say that? I'm just trying to think of how I say the exact words. It's something to the effect of, if you got this product free from a friend, just let us know. You can go here to claim your bonuses, and you too can get future updates of this product when you register at www.whatever. So I make it sound more like it's serving them by doing something to subscribe, as opposed to it sounding like you're telling them to get lost.
Mm-hmm. And there's another interesting thing is, and that came up. I was telling somebody in the print book to have a footer that says something like, for three bonuses to your book visits. So/gifts. And they said, but what if somebody's reading it in the bookstore and they didn't buy the book? I said, well, bully for them. They'll get on my list. They'll get their bonuses. They're going to want to buy the book even if they didn't, because all this good stuff's going to be there and they're going to want to start writing their book. And I don't care. It doesn't matter. So I'm not afraid. I said, why should I be afraid? Gosh, somebody could actually use my material. I mean, please use my material. Please. Get your book written. Get yourself successful. Do your thing. Whatever. It'll all shake out, you know. So.
And the number of people that are likely to do that, to truly rip you off like that, is so small. The number of people that are more likely to do that, that you never would have reached without having done that, is so much bigger.
Right.
So does that help, Rhonda?
Yes, it does. It does. It does help a lot, because I see this, you know, going around, and I definitely come from a place of abundance, but at the same time, I see a lot of prominent people who sell a lot of products doing this, and I just wanted to get some clarity on that from you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because I personally, myself, didn't know what I should do, and I was sure that other people listening to us are thinking that, you know, would probably have the same question.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sure that they will. I'm sure that they would have that kind of question. In fact, Gina, one of your clients on Saturday was, you know, talking to me about that stuff and getting all into this, putting this coding into pages and, you know, worrying about stuff getting stolen. I said, well, I mean, okay, do I lock the door to my house when I leave it? Yes, I'm not an idiot. But on the other hand, I don't put up, do not trespass on this house, all kinds of signage and all kinds of stuff. So I said, so what's the line between, do I leave my door standing wide open with a come rob from me sign? No. Do I lock my door and close it? Yes, I do. Absolutely. Because I'm no fool. But on the other hand, you know, that line. And so it says, do you really think that, and taking all this time to do all this other stuff. He goes, well, it only took a few minutes. I said, all right, but let's stop and back up and let's go through and think about the mindset that causes you to be so frightened that somebody might steal your ebook or your whatever, your bonus page or your something or other and actually use it. It's just, you know, there's always a line to be drawn and to understand, just kind of like how we were talking earlier between the giving too much being a bonus or being an onus. There is always a line that can be drawn, but if you do come from a place of, I don't want to give too much, or I don't want someone to steal stuff from me, that puts it into people's minds that, well, maybe it's possible to steal from you. You don't need to do that either. So it's a good distinction to think of.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Good job on the thing. Okay, so what else do we want to talk about with regard to product creation?
Couple of other really simple things, you know, the footer, like you mentioned, a header that has your name on it. We already talked about the border. When someone, and here's another thing with things like the font and the spacing. If someone's going to read stuff online, I see a lot of times people putting stuff that's single spaced, and they have these paragraphs that go on for miles. I literally saw an entire page that was one paragraph. And I don't know how many lines were on the page, 25, 28 lines? How enticing is that to read? Not.
Yeah.
Not.
Yeah.
So really things like that that make sure that the text, if someone's going to read it on their screen or off of one of those little portable readers or whatever, you know, I put things, the basic text a lot of times in a 14-point font because they'd be reading off of a screen a lot of times. And put 1.5 spacing instead of single so that your eye isn't just bombarded with stuff. I teach people to make your paragraphs, most of them should be short. If you have a paragraph that gets over 9 lines long, it's probably too long. I mean, maybe one occasionally, it might be 10. If you have this tendency to ramble, and it's like 2 paragraphs on an entire page, well, that is just going to encourage people to go, well, this is too much work. So you see what I'm saying? Those are all very simple things that help people want to be reading your material.
And in getting that's part of consumption, I think. Don't you, Rhonda?
It's part of consumption. It's part of the eye appeal of your product. And it's part of having some white space on the page so that it doesn't look as if somebody's reading one of their high school textbooks. So, yes, it's part of consumption, and it's part of look, feel. I call it look, feel, and appeal.
Okay, that's a good way to call it. So in doing your product, you really want to set it up to maximize that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Maximize it. And a lot of these things are settings that are set up once so that they do not take a lot of time. And isn't it nice if you have something where in less than 5 minutes there are probably about 6 or 8 considerations around look, feel, and appeal that will help people want to read your material and help them want to consume and do what you say to do and get the best use out of the product. And it's not hard.
There's two topics there to talk about a little bit. Number one, in terms of setting up the look, feel, and appeal, that's an easy thing that you can do to help to nicheify the product. So let's say you just put out 10 steps to making more money in your business. You could really set it up so that one version of that becomes 10 steps to making more money in your real estate business. Another becomes 10 steps to making more money in your chiropractic business. Another one becomes 10 steps to making more money in your online business, and so on. And just
right.
By changing the look and feel of the product, and changing things like the cover and the title, you don't have to change any of the other portions of the product inside. You could easily go in and change the stories, maybe, but that would be about it. In doing that, look at what you've just done for yourself. You're no longer going to have, you know, the possibility of making one sale. You're going to have the ability to make sales over and over again from people in all of these different industries. Your conversions are likely to be much higher in each one of them because it's so specific. And the back-end sales are going to be higher still because you could really focus your message on that one audience. That's a really, really big deal in looking at product creation. Make sure that you look at how you can nicheify your product. My term, it's just easier to say it that way. So that you can different versions of the same product.
Exactly. You know, my book, The Instant VIP, I can easily co-author it with somebody in 100 pitches, and the only changes essentially would be for them to add like a foreword and a chapter or something, and, you know, how to write a book for real estate, write a book for chiropractors, whatever. It would be all those niches would not be at all difficult. And just the way that you can use some of the viral PDF types of programs to make something specifically for an affiliate, you can also do the same thing with a niche. So there's like a little piece of code for your blank business, and it would replace it with chiropractic or massage or golf or whatever it was, and without really hardly any extra labor at all. So it's very good to do those things. And I have to say, especially if you have a document that's more than this, please put a page number on it.
Yes.
I printed off about 20 pages out of somebody's 200-page ebook because it had stuff I wanted. And the pages fell out of the printer tray, and they were not numbered.
Oh, my.
And it was from somebody who I thought should have known better than to put out something without page numbers, because they think, well, you're reading it online, what do you need page numbers? Well, if you do happen to print it off. So that one had, and it was a J. Abraham product, and it had no page number, no border, no header, no footer, no website, no nothing. I couldn't believe it.
And yet it was successful in terms of the upsell, right?
I have no idea of what the upsell, you know, had done or whatever. I'm imagining that it was a very successful product for him. But it's just, I think of some of those little things. I mean, if nothing else, at least having a page number. Yes, if I'm reading it on screen, it will tell me page whatever of whatever. But if I happen to print it out, it's kind of handy to know, especially if it falls out of your printer tray. You don't want to have to rearrange.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not hard. It's like that's a one-second thing. And a lot of these types of things are very, very simple when you think of look, feel, and appeal.
Absolutely.
You said that there were two aspects.
Second one is repurposing your content. We've talked before on the show about repurposing articles so that you put an article out one place and then use that to populate multiple places. It's a way of getting leverage. How can you get leverage like that working for you with info products?
So, it's the same type of principle. I mean, for example, if you have an ebook type product, you can take some pieces out of that and turn those into articles that get populated everywhere. Put it out once as an article, spin it, make a Scooby-Doo lens out of it or whatever. Those kinds of things you can very easily do. As far as making other products, when you really have thought through and you have a system, just in the same way, Gina, that you take your 30-day IM challenge, and that leads people to your bachelor program and coaching and so forth, and you're using the same base material for all of those programs, when you plan it right, you can take what is at one point is the low-end product. It might be $37 or free or $27 or whatever, and you're using that basic material for other things. So if I do a home study course on writing a book, I can use the ebook product as, if you will, the text that we're following, that we're using for that product. For the individual coaching, I can use the ebook product and the home study course as the basic materials so that when we have coaching, it's focused completely on that one person and their specific book and business idea. And so you're repurposing in that way, and you can easily figure out what pieces of this product can I turn into something else. If I have 10 modules, can I sell them individually, or even some of them, even if you didn't want to sell all 10 separately for any reason? What if you had 6 maybe that you sold individually and as well as the whole? That would still give you 7 products. So there are so many ways to make this happen without whole lots of effort.
I agree wholeheartedly on that. And repurposing the content so that you can take a single product and turn it into multiple products is the fastest, easiest way of making more money. So simple. And yet so few people actually think about it and actually implement it. I think this is one of the secrets to Liz Tomei's success online, is all of her early products came with resale rights. And the way that she did it was the resellers had to leave a certain message on her download page that would allow buyers who are paying them 100% of the money that they're paying for the product, those buyers are ending up on Liz's list. And it wasn't just a one-time thing. It's every JV partner she's done since then. Everybody really has come in as a reseller and then moved on to become an affiliate and then moved on to start selling her other products as she developed them, not as a reseller but as an affiliate. Had she not put the things out there with three soics to start with, it probably wouldn't have happened at that big of a level. And that's what I'm saying with the player in, I'm sorry, that's what I'm saying with regard to repurposing your content. That is one form of repurposing your content. Another form is what you described. You could take a series of teleconferences and break the recordings and transcripts up into products. This is something I'll be doing next year as soon as I'm finished with the last component of the blogging for peace thing that I'm doing next year. As I finish that, I'll be moving into taking a bunch of my products that are already out there and repurposing them in unique ways. I'll be taking all of the weekend workshops that I do and pulling them apart. Each one has at least 8 modules. Each one of those modules will be sold as an individual standalone product, and it will then sell the whole workshop product as a back end to it.
Right.
So
that's what I'm going to be doing.
That's the ways you can do it.
Yeah.
That's how you're going to do it with your home study course?
Right. I'm going to take the 10. There are 10 modules that are mine. There are 3 that are bonuses from partners, but I'm going to take my 10 modules and have those be lower investment point individual products and then sell the whole. So I figured do the whole thing, get it going, and then now I can be able to make those additional products. So rather than go, oh, if I created one thing, now I have to do something entirely new, it's no, let's just get and milk everything for all it's worth of what's already been done.
Well, and I'm going to take it one step further in that each module, when it's sold as a standalone, will come with resale rights so that I can get other people out there selling the standalone modules, and they'll be brandable resale rights so that they can put their affiliate link into it, and they will then sell my full weekend workshop packages for me.
That's a cool idea.
I mean, that's maximum leverage, right? Now you don't even have to drive the traffic yourself.
Yep, that's very cool. I like that.
Some people would say, well, don't do that because you're going to lose all the money on those resale rights products. The amount that you'll lose by selling the resale rights products and getting other people to then drive the traffic for you is so minimal compared to the increase in sales because of that. So it's a non-issue. You don't even want to think about it in those terms. What you want to look at is, by essentially giving it away, because that's what you're doing when you're reselling it or your resellers are reselling it, you're giving it away and that you don't make any money on it. It brings you so many more sales of anything else you want to sell within it. It would not make sense to sell resale rights if there weren't ways within the product to make more money from it. Then it wouldn't make sense to do it at all. Because why are you bothering selling the resale rights at that point? It's not going to help you do anything.
Right. Absolutely.
If you
want to
actually plan your info products out from the start in reverse to figure out whether this is a strategy that you want to use or not. It may not work for everybody, especially if the back end products that you're selling are not your own, or they're products that you make such a small amount of money on that you really end up making more money selling the front end product yourself. But if you've got a series of products like Rhonda and I do, or like Rhonda Court is now creating, going out and selling the resale rights to something on the front end that's closely tied to the other things that you can sell on the back end makes so much sense.
Right. Absolutely. And you're not doing resale rights to the whole workshop, just to the piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I would, you know, I may do that too. That sounds really cool. So I would do the resale rights just to the small piece, not to the whole thing. So, yeah,
correct.
Even if you want to, I wouldn't say losing money, but if you'd want to say, well, they're making all the money and I'm making nothing on that piece, yes, but if everything has from the bonuses on up to everything else an embedded thing of get the full program at, then that's, you're making that.
And when you sell the resale rights, you might even want to include like a 5 to 10 part autoresponder sequence for your resellers to use that they can put their affiliate links into that will sell the other product you're trying to sell.
because they will use it if you give it to them. They won't necessarily go out and create the series themselves, but if it comes with the resale rights, they'll absolutely use it because it has a way to make them money that also makes you money.
And they don't have to think about it. They can just load it into their return. All you have to do is say, look, I made you this series of 5 or 10 or whatever messages. All you have to do is replace where it says link with your affiliate link to the product, and you're good to go, and the message is done, and that's it. And giving instructions for how someone can use that, it's very simple. You do it once, and it really helps. In terms of repurposing, I also took a free mini class, and I put it inside of a rebrandable PDF along with a couple other things for an affiliate to use. So that's a specialized tool. It's just repurposing what's already done.
Great idea.
It leads to their affiliate link for the main product, and they get to give out this free 10-part multimedia mini class. That's the thing. If something's multimedia, if it has videos or an audio in there anywhere, it's multimedia. So
absolutely,
people like that. It's not just, I'm going to read this PDF. When they see that it's multimedia, that there's going to be videos and audios, it's really a good way to...
We've only got about a minute left, and I wanted to get a link in before we do that. A few months back, we did a weekend workshop called the Info Product Systems Workshop. And in that workshop, we talked about all the topics we've been covering today. How do you get people to consume your products, and how do you get people to buy your next product, and how do you repurpose the content so that you can create multiple products from one thing that you do so that you can really get leverage. That whole workshop is in a downloadable format at askggg.com/IP like Paul call, IP call, askggg.com/IP call. Out of all of the weekend workshops that I've done, that one has the best results from people who are going out and implementing it, meaning that they are making more money from that than any of the others. It's a really awesome, awesome course, and I just love the feedback that I'm hearing on it. So if you want to go forward with doing your own info products, it's a great way to use the checklists that are in there to help you put those products together. So what are we doing next week on our show, Rhonda?
Well, next, we are going to hear from somebody talking about buzz. So that's going to be pretty exciting. How to create buzz, yeah. And so that's going to be really fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Can't wait myself. That'll be next Tuesday at noon Eastern when we're back here for another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank our guest, Rhonda Court, for joining us today, as well as my co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady from ProfitableStorytelling.com. Everyone have a great week, and we will see you back here at noon Eastern next Tuesday, December 22nd, really getting close to the holiday, for another episode of Relationship Marketing 101. Have a great week, and remember to go out and take what you've learned on these calls and go really try it, put it into action, and use a corrective course action plan to get it done instead of making it perfect.
Right.
So thank you, ladies. I'll see you next week, Rhonda.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Thanks, Rhonda Court. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.